Pythara looks over the letter. She says, I don't know who this chip is, but this sounds like a trap.
I go to my room and I get out an old chest. I start pulling out several pieces of armor. Well, if it is a trap, then they baited it with a tiger. Being captured is like a game to my mom and dad. They're probably just waiting for me to show up to rescue them.
What's the pretense for the arrest?
I think we weren't supposed to be in the bottom of the dungeon or whatever.
You know, back in my day, when someone committed a grave enough crime, we would execute 3 generations of family. Mostly that was reserved for the nobility, because they had a lot of resources and family connections, so if you wipe them all out, they can't retaliate.
Oh, well, I mean, we're not political. We're kind of like mercenaries, my family.
Could they assemble a mercenary army?
Oh yeah, they got friends in mercenary groups all over the place. They also have a bunch of favors from, like, bandit kings and wizards and certain nobility.
Elvis, I hate to see this kind of tyrannical injustice. Your parents are clearly innocent and haven't done anything wrong. And I'll exercise my powers if it means setting them free.
Oh, okay, thank you. Could you exercise your power to help tighten these straps? This armor was made for when I was younger, and it doesn't quite fit, so I need help.
I think I can do better than that. Sagwa-sanfa, and she stretches out the armor and the straps to make it fit you better.
Oh, cool. That would normally take forever to do. My mom never refit this armor because it's got tons of runes on it, and they're supposed to keep me really safe, but, you know, it would just take too long.
Certainly. As my knight, I wouldn't want you to come to harm. As a politically ambitious dragon, one grows to power by gathering men of merit under her wings. Keeping them alive is equally as important as attracting them in the first place. If I can't keep you safe as the first of my servants, then how would I attract anyone to my banners?
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, I'm gonna grab some extra swords, an extra bow and arrow, maybe a crossbow for me, just lots of stuff. We're gonna have to take it to my parents.
Are you planning to just march directly in?
Yeah, all I gotta do is get to my parents. Then once they've got weapons, it's all over for whoever captured them.
There's a saying that men who lose battles begin the fight and expect to win. Men who win secure victory, then go to battle. If all we need to secure our victory is to get to your parents, then I suggest we hide our identity on the way in. I personally am already an unknown, but I can change your appearance in the same way that I changed the shape of your armor. Temporarily, of course. That way we can get as close as possible before we have to resort to fighting. And if we're very lucky, maybe we can walk out without raising a sword.
Okay, you're full of good ideas. We'll run that by Paul when we get back to him.
Speaking of, Paul, you're surrounded by your fellow monks and all of them are dead silent. One of them nudges Milton. He goes, you're his master. Talk to him. Milton steps forward and he says, Paul, I don't know if
I
can...
Go and get the town guard, Milton.
Yes, sir. And Milton runs off.
All right, sit down on the pavilion.
The other monks eventually creep in and start to tend to Namir's body. Madame McGoffel approaches you and she says, so, this entire thing was a double cross.
I'm more like a double agent, madam.
You expect me to buy that? No wonder you rescued the lizard guy, because you're in cahoots with him.
I am not. I genuinely hate him. I'm just too important to leave, lady.
You tried to kill Queen Aloria.
That was kind of unplanned. My back was to the wall. Oh, I beat the tar out of him because he tried to do that. That was 100% sincere. And being honest, I don't think I've ever had as much respect as I did when I was working under Queen Aloria, even if it was under false pretenses. Between you and me, I mean, I'd probably go back there if I didn't have any other obligations.
Well, what about me? You dragged me up here. I thought that you were one of our men.
Well, that's why we've got Lowry. He can get you back down. Go on, Lowry, take her.
What now?
Yeah, if we all wait around, we're just going to get arrested. McGoffel's not going to have a chance. Take her back down there now.
I'm not going with this psychopath.
Yeah, I'm completely untrustworthy, Paul. Who knows what I'll do? I might get ideas.
For once in your life, Lowry, could you be reliable?
No.
Elvis, you return. I assume you walk in through the front gates with Pythara.
Oh, wow. What happened here?
I won a duel with Namir.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That means you surpassed your master.
He's surpassed. He's been surpassed. I had him surpassed from the start. Not in terms of martial prowess, just in terms of personal merit. Which is not saying a lot. Patting myself on the back, that's an easy one. In fact, Elvis, you're easily a better person than me. Why don't you make a run for it?
Oh, well, now my parents are in danger. They've been kidnapped.
Kidnap? Why?
Well, probably because all the crimes we did, but Pythara also thinks it's a trap to lure us out. And I think it's a pretty good trap, and I'm going to get lured out by it.
Well, not exactly, Pythara says. We're going to use my magic to hide our identities, get close to the jail cell, free Elvis's parents, and then fight our way out.
Yeah, all right. I get up.
Oh, come on, Paul. Don't you want to see your own parents again?
I killed a man who was supposed to be like a father to me. Elvis, can't you appreciate that?
Oh, are you bummed about it? I mean, my dad is always saying, you know, like, the day that you've arrived is the day you can kill your own father. I don't think I'm supposed to kill my dad, but it's like a big milestone.
Think of it this way, Paul. We're supposed to be creating a distraction.
This is distracting, sure, but you're making it too easy. We should get all hands on deck to try and stop your reign of terror.
Well, where does that leave me? What am I supposed to do?
If Lowry would cooperate, you could return home.
Empty-handed? I think not. Look, all three of you are coming back with me.
That's feasible. We could lead them on a chase through the dungeon. That would really slow him down.
Okay. Yeah, that's possible. We could rescue your parents, retreat into the dungeon, and then who knows what'll happen.
Madame McGoffel, I know you've only just come into all of this, but I'm looking for somewhere to plant my roots. Maybe if you help us out, I might see to pledging allegiance to Queen Eloria. McGoffel gives her a long look, and she goes, well, that's something that Queen Eloria would need to consider. But I tell you what, if that's what's on the table, then okay, count me in. Good, Pythara says. Then is everybody on board?
All right, yeah. Yeah, let's do it.
Good. And if everything goes well, don't worry. I won't hang you out to dry. Consider yourselves all my people.
I don't believe in that kind of organizational structure.
Well, then you're in luck. There's no structure yet. Anyway, let's go.
Okay, we start heading towards the ziggurat.
You do. Partway there, Pythara stops, and she puts her hands all over you guys. Sagwa sanfa, sagwa sanfa, and she changes your facial features.
None for me, thanks.
But you and Paul are the two most recognizable. Done my best to make him look more like a tiger than a panther, but even that could still get questioned. Just let me make you look a little more like a dragon man.
Well, they can't tell the difference between lizard men and dragon men.
Well, obviously the differences are clear as day. A dragon person has a much flatter skull.
That's what I told them, but they don't see it.
Okay, look, just let me try, and if they don't see it, then you can prove me wrong.
Oh. Oh, yeah, in that case, okay, go ahead. You'll see. You'll see. They don't know the difference.
All right, the party is all rearranged and changed in appearance, more or less, and you ascend the ziggurat. You arrive outside the jailhouse where you guys were once kept, and unless you have any other ideas, you go in through the front door. There, a receptionist says, hello, can I help you?
Ah, yes. I have here a message saying that my parents need to be released immediately, and I pull out my crossbow and shoot the guy.
Well, he's not wearing any armor or anything, so you go for your weapon, and he starts to stand up, and then, bang! And he dies.
Okay, go over and check the guy for keys.
I want to say we crossed a line here, but
I mean, we killed guards before, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, but look at McGoffel. We were under duress.
We're under duress now.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's fair.
You get the keys. You head back to the jail cell, and there your parents are, sitting around, looking bored. They sit up, and then look perplexed, and your dad says, well, hold on a minute. Who are you?
Pythara, if you could, please.
Pythara snaps, and your disguises fade away. Your dad claps and goes, oh, the old disguise trick. One of my favorites. I like to dress up like a woman, personally, but, you know, this was much more elegant.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of dressing up as a girl. We just had to use short-notice disguise magic.
Well, that's okay. Next time. You know, this wasn't even a very good capture. You know, they didn't strip your mother naked? And your mom sighs and shrugs and goes, it's like amateur hour in here. Yeah, not chained to the walls or anything. They just took away our weapons and made us sit in here. So boring. Not once did they try to sacrifice us to a dark god. You know, my family bloodline has the ability to unlock lots of different dark gods. It's pretty astonishing.
Yeah, it was all a big legal thing, I think.
The exit door creaks open slightly, and then Pythara says, hold on a minute. And she points that way, and then down. With a sickening, slapping thud, you see the crumpled corpse of Rox Bennigan, killed instantly by the pull to the floor. Looks like your enemy's posted a sentry, Pythara says, and she walks up to him and starts gathering the rings off of his body. She goes, I claim that kill, so these are mine now, if nobody minds. Elvis, your dad nudges you and goes, this lady's spicy. Where'd you pick her up?
In a cave.
How'd you know he was there?
Who is that?
Oh, that's Chip Dougal's lawyer.
What was he doing on the ceiling?
Looking for us, surely. It would be complicated to explain, but basically, once I knew I should be looking for something, he was easy to spot.
Okay, you see anything else that you should be looking for?
Pythara looks around, she kind of covers up one eye, and she goes, oh, uh-oh.
Oh, that's not good, what?
Well, he was on sentry, but we've also got magic alarms, which we've already tripped.
Well, okay, let's go!
You didn't think to look for those before?
To be honest, I wasn't expecting nearly this kind of resistance. These are very complex runes.
Oh, toss my mom and dad their weapons. Here, Dad, I brought your sword, and Mom, I brought your bow.
Oh, thank you, honey. You thought of us. He thought of us. That's my boy.
You know, not a single person commented on the disguise. I wasn't able to prove anything.
Do we have time to get the disguises back?
I regret I might have been a little hasty in dropping them. With these magical alarms tripped, I don't think there's time. Not to worry, Elvis's dad says. Though it may seem like brains have failed, it's taken a lot of brains to learn to fight like I have. So even if it comes to violence, we're still playing a battle of wits.
All right, let's go. And I press outside.
There before you, as of course the worst case, stands Chip Dougal and his men Omar Hubbard and Wayne Peck. With them is a man in lavish robes, who you recognize from the coins as Antiphates Rawl. Chip and his guys look very disoriented, although Wayne is doing his best to act like he knows exactly what's going on. As they're kind of gazing around in bewilderment, Antiphates says, "Well, here we are, the source of all the troubles." Indeed, this seemed like an awful lot of focused work for three incompetent men who only just came into the service of the Adventuring Guild. But here stands the ringleader. "I wasn't sure if I was overestimating you until I saw you kill Bennigan." Chip and his guys all snap to look at Antiphates. And then Chip kind of gets this grimaced smile on his face and looks genuinely in pain. "Almost no one, aside from myself, has been able to see through Bennigan's enchantments. The fact that you were able to spot him, and then so ruthlessly snuff him out, is evidence of a prowess you cannot hide. So, why not step forward, your hand thus tipped, and announce your intentions and your ambitions?"
"All right, I admit it. I set out from the very beginning to prove that you and all of society was wrong about everything."
"If you're going to let your lackey speak on your behalf, I assure you I can dispatch them with the same ease that you dispatched one of my men." "Lowry," Pythara says, "I am the one who killed the man on the ceiling, so..."
"I mean, yes, directly, you were the one who killed him, but the only reason you were in that room is because of my actions. Everything that I did led up to this moment."
"But not by a plan, though."
"Well, of course not. Plans can be derailed. When you operate like I do, which is completely by the seat of your pants, nothing can ever go wrong because nothing ever was established."
"There's a wider wisdom there, but let me address the gentleman." And she steps forward and she says, "I am Pythara, and I'm actually not the ringleader of whatever it is you're most concerned about right now. I'm not really up to speed yet on what's gone on, but it seems that through a mix of your own incompetence and their dumb luck, whatever you're furious about now, aside from the murder, is probably the responsibility of just happenstance and your own citizens acting out." "They're not my citizens," Rawl replies. "I run a private organization." "Oh, well then, in that case, why don't you step aside, do away with the vigilanteism, and let the proper authorities deal with all this?" "These," he says, motioning to Chip, "are the proper authorities to deal with guild issues. They are, allegedly, the finest warriors the Adventuring Guild has to offer. So, go forward and rectify the situation, if you would please," and he motions to Chip. Chip begins to step forward, and Pythara says, wait, I actually haven't tipped my full hand." She stretches out her arms, and in a cascade of sparks and electricity, she takes her dragon form. Rawl's eyes widen, and then, wordlessly, he stretches out his arms, and in thick billowing smoke, he takes the form of a black dragon. The two rise to their full heights in a threat display, and as far as you guys can tell, actually, it looks like Pythara's a little bit bigger. But Antiphates tries to rise higher. He takes wing, goes to the sky, and not to be outdone, Pythara goes up as well. Horrific blossoms of combat magic begin streaking across the sky, and everyone stares on in complete disbelief. Well, everyone except for you guys, who at least knew that Pythara was a dragon this whole time.
Okay, all right, Lowry, you take on Wayne. He's a wizard, so you should be good there.
He's a charlatan and a stage actor.
Good, right, yes, tell him.
Elvis's dad steps forward and says, "My wife and I will take on Omar. Trust me, it'll require the both of us."
"All right, that leaves me, Elvis, and Madam McGoffel on Chip."
At that, Chip turns around. He says to Wayne, "That's pretty incredible. You think you could do that?" Wayne says, "Well, I mean, I could. I could take a form of a dragon. I don't think I'd have quite that much magical ability afterward, though. I'd be struggling just to retain the form." "Well, you'll have to walk me through it later, because... Guildies.
They've got you outnumbered 2-1, Chip."
"Oh, you hear that, Wayne? They've got us outnumbered 2-1. That's funny. That's not my math." And Wayne chuckles. Omar doesn't laugh. Omar does not smile. "Because see, by my math, the way that I'm counting it, it's actually 11-6.
I mean, look around. Are there other guards here? Who is he counting?"
"No one else seems actively engaged or anything. Like, there are people in the courtyard, but they're all kind of watching the dragon fight right now."
"What is this, some kind of Lowry math?"
"We outnumber you 15-21.
"You know, you guys have been amazing in a lot of ways. You know, I have tried to be friends. I have tried to help you get on the correct track with your career and everything else you wanted to do. And you blew me off. And it has been complicated. Been trying to figure things out and understand what it is that you wanted or what everybody else was trying to do. But you know what, though? It's not very complicated right now. You killed my lawyer, Guildies, and I like to think he was a friend, too. That means that no matter what else is going on, or who you know, or what this is," he says, pointing to the dragons, "we are enemies now. And thanks to that, I've got a pretty concrete idea of what it is I need to do. And he waves his guys forward. We're at the top of 12. Let's start with Wayne. He leaps forward and begins raising his staff.
Hey, are you sure that's a magical staff? That could just be a normal piece of wood.
And the runes fizzle out. Wayne is neutralized. Omar assumes a fighting stance, and your dad stands in the way. And he says, "It's time I revealed something to you, son." Your dad screams and is enveloped in a glowing light. Then he emerges from that light, a towering monstrosity. He looks like a white ogre with angel wings and a burning halo of many eyes floating behind his back. The sword you gave him is on fire. Your mom says, "Our family has a bloodline curse, dear."
Oh, really? Am I bloodline cursed?
Well, we were going to wait until your 18th birthday. Sometimes it sets in a bit late. I mean, we were going to tell you, but also, sometimes it skips a generation. So we think probably you don't have the demon bloodline.
Is that good or bad for me?
Well, it would depend on who won the battle for your soul, your dad says. But not to worry, our family is historically very strong-willed. We've only had a few losses. Regardless, I know Omar well enough to know that I can hold nothing back against him. Omar, I have but one thing to say to you, and then Omar just runs at him. What begins is a titanic battle. Your dad swings his flaming sword and Omar catches it. And you would see more, but that's all because Chip steps forward, and as he does so, he leaves behind at first what you think is an afterimage, but then you realize it is simply another Chip Dougal. And after 9 paces, there are now 9 Chip Dougals all advancing on you at once. They form a semicircle around you and raise their weapons.
Gonna be honest, I was hoping Chip was more of a politician than a fighter.
Oh, but I see we're outnumbered now.
That's all right. When you're outnumbered, divide and conquer, McGoffle says. And then, Sugwasunfar! A wall of centipedes flies up, separating the Chips 4 and 5, with 4 Chips on your side and her taking on the other 5.
Well, that was generous of her.
Okay, Paul, you remember the Minotaurs?
I remember that going badly.
But same tactics, though, okay? I defend, you attack, stay close to me.
Then what?
Well, the battle goes one way or the other.
Meanwhile, back over to Wayne and Lowry. Lowry, so far the battle is going heavily in your favor. There's a bunch of yelling somewhere to your left, and something behind you explodes. And then Wayne says, "You know what? I don't need magic to beat a coward like you." And he hoists up his stick and he swings it at you, hitting you on the shoulder. That's going to be 6 damage.
What crack? Ow, ow. God, how come no one ever wants to settle anything civilly?
All right, Lowry, and your response.
You know what? Actually, I know what it is. You don't want to behave like a man because you're not even human. You're more like a stubborn donkey.
Shut up and fight, Wayne says.
No, I'm not gonna get in a physical altercation with a donkey.
Then you can die where you stand, Wayne says. Alright, back over to Elvis and Paul. How do you guys want to play this?
Okay, just actively defend.
As for me, as soon as 2 of them get close, do multiple attack, try to hit one, then try to hit the other.
Alright, 2 Chips close in, and then you go to attack them, putting them on the defensive foot. They back up and use the reach of their iron club to keep you from hitting them. You can't chase after them and stay next to Elvis at the same time. And just to be sure, they take a few deadly and harrowing swings to keep you at bay. Their clubs zing through the air as they pass by your face. Zing! Zing! He is swinging that thing incredibly fast. Elvis, you meanwhile intercept the other 2. You manage to glance 2 attacks away with your sword and shield. Whang! Whang! And the vibrations go through your arm. Neither of your tools comes away unmolested either. That sword that you stole from Torvald chips a little bit, and your shield dents.
Uh-oh.
Okay, Lowry, back to you! Wayne swings his stick again. Whack! 4 damage.
Wow, that stings. Look, a donkey shouldn't be swinging a stick around. You should get in your place.
Is this how you plan to die?
You'd think you'd be able to listen to me with ears that big.
Oh, shut up.
No, really, check your ears.
He pauses. Without taking his eyes off you, he touches his ear real quick. And then he goes back for another take. He grabs his ears and he goes, "What?" And he grabs a pair of long donkey ears that are now on the side of his head.
I told you. Did you think a man would have this level of stubbornness? You're just living in denial, which ultimately is also a very donkey-like thing to do.
All right, Paul and Elvis, same trick?
Yep, keep them at bay. Hold the line.
All right, Paul, you keep them from closing in on you, but Elvis, with a smirk, the first Chip decides to attack your sword directly and viciously. You manage to fend him off, but then in a brief second when both your weapons are locked together, the second Chip comes in and brings his club down hard on the middle of your sword. Your sword breaks in half.
Uh-oh.
All right, back over to Lowry. Elvis's dad is thrown forward across your field of vision. Omar runs after him almost as quickly as Elvis's dad is flying. And then you hear, la 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 la, as Elvis's mom runs after them with the bow and arrow drawn.
Do you guys mind? I'm trying to have an argument with a barnyard animal.
Wayne, still holding his ears, says, "What are you doing? How?"
I'm not doing anything. You've just always been a donkey. Is this your first time checking? Look, you have a tail.
He looks behind himself, and sure enough, he's got a tail.
See? Donkey. Whole time. All your life.
Paul and Elvis! Paul, you're still keeping two chips at the defensive as well as you can, but Elvis, your chips are gaining momentum. You block the swing of the first chip, and then the second one hits you under the arm. It's gonna be 27 damage.
Okay. Blah, I throw up.
You felt that one, huh?
Oh yeah, that's the blow that kills the Demon Lord.
I hope you're ready for the next one, Gildy. Your mom makes some good armor.
She's one of the best.
Paul, you standing next to that could feel the heat coming off of that strike. It was an explosive collision, like a little fireball formed.
Jeez, can you take another of those?
Mom's magic runes never leave home without them.
Okay, Lowry.
I mean, this whole time, every time I saw you, I thought to myself, isn't it weird that they dressed up a donkey in wizard robes and they said, oh, you're a wizard now, and the donkey just believed it?
Wayne involuntarily leans down and puts his hands to the ground, and he goes, no, no, I'm not a donkey. All right, Paul and Elvis, the chips go in for the kill. Elvis, you had to recover on your last action. What now?
I abort to block.
All right, we go into desperation defenses. You spend your next action to defend now. And it pays off. Whang, you block the first one, then whang, you block the next. All right, back over to Lowry. You are now just arguing with a farm animal. There is a donkey standing before you. It looks distressed, and it is making a lot of noise, but otherwise it is fundamentally just a donkey.
All right, where did Omar and Elvis's dad go?
They're to your right, having a horrendous pitched battle.
Okay, yell at Omar. Hey, a normal human can't move that fast.
And just like that, Omar slows down a little bit. It completely throws off everything, and Elvis's dad catches him and overpowers him, then chops his head clean off his neck. But okay, Elvis and Paul! Chip does not let up, and Elvis, you are on a defensive deficit. The first chip swings with all his force and tears the shield off your arm. Thus exposed, the second chip goes in for the kill. All you can do is throw your hands up. Kapang! 32 damage.
Okay, that's a permanent injury, and I'm in bleed out.
You throw up your arm, hoping to block the attack, because it's all that you have left, and the swing from the club takes off your sword arm. It's so fast and brutal you can barely feel it, but there's nothing but a stump left where your arm used to be. You go to the ground and begin to bleed to death. Lowry, over to you.
Okay, of the chips that Madame McGoffel is fighting, are any of them dead yet?
Yes, there is one lying on the floor. It looks like he choked to death on centipedes.
Hey, you can't keep fighting. You're already dead.
Lowry, Chip turns to look at you. He turns pale, and the smile fades off his face after the life fades out of his eyes. And he falls over. McGoffel, what happened?
Well, you killed him, obviously.
Oh my god, my baby! And Elvis, your mom runs over to you, and Sagwa Sanfa, Sagwa Sanfa, she stabilizes your injury. You are no longer bleeding to death, but you are still missing an entire right arm.
Am I dead? Mom, did we all die?
No, son. Your dad's got tears in his eyes, which turn into fire as they roll off his cheeks. We got them. We did it.
Oh, good. Oh, good. My arm hurts.
There was an earth-shaking crash. One of the dragons has fallen out of the sky and landed on the houses below. The blue dragon form of Pathara swoops over the pavilion, lands, and then reverts to her human form. How's it going over here? She asks. Then, noting Elvis, says, Oh, that doesn't look good.
We gotta get out of here.
Well, I guess the cat's out of the bag, and she transforms back into a dragon. So it doesn't matter, go ahead and hop on my back, and we'll ride out of here. With that, everyone clambers onto Pathara's back, and she takes to the skies.
Goodbye, Dungeon City.
And thanks for all the fish.
What?
I don't know, I lost a lot of blood.
After you guys get a certain distance away, Elvis's dad says, well, I guess it's back to the independent circuit for us. Banditry on occasion, but otherwise heroics. Elvis, your mom says, don't worry, honey, you can learn to fight with just your left arm. I once met a pirate who did exactly that, and he was amazing.
Thanks, Mom. And also, thank you for building my armor for me. You obviously put a lot of love and an overwhelming amount of defensive magic in it.
Oh boy, did I. I thought it was going to explode in the forge and take the whole house with it.
Thank you.
Actually, Pathara says, I've been thinking. Mr. Elvis's father, you know a few warlords, right? You can gather together an army. Well, you bet I could if I had to call in the favors. Well, I guarantee you, after all that, there's going to be a lot of concern and unrest around the city. If a well-respected man of martial prowess showed up and put things under control, I suppose the local lordship would appreciate it, would he not? He could, and I may think about it. And, Madam McGoffle, I feel that in these times of strife, we could greatly benefit from normalizing relationships with the Dark Bottom. There may be some risks and bumps, but we could probably work out some very favorable trading conditions. She says, I won't consent until I see the terms. And of course, the other three, I'm in need of men of talent. Don't answer right away. Just think about it. And whatever happens next, the choice is yours. And so, the story of our three heroes isn't yet over. But thus ends the tale of the Dungeon Men.
Well, that was a really good one, Mason. I had a good time.
Yeah, that was good. I kind of enjoyed how influential we were and yet how powerless we felt for the whole thing.
Yeah, I kept waiting to be punished. And I kind of got punished, but not really.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you should have been, but I was having fun with your shtick.
Well, does anyone have plans for a new one?
Actually, yeah. If you guys will let me run another one, I want to do a superhero campaign.
Are you sure? You're not getting Forever GM syndrome or anything?
No, I'm actually really eager for this one. So, I want you guys to create superheroes who are part of a super team. Like, imagine the Justice League, but it's only you and Superman. However, tragedy strikes, and now it's only you, no Superman. And all of you have a different perspective on what it means to be a hero and what to do next.
So are we talking like campy cape stuff or like the gritty kind of modern anti-hero stuff?
Try to moderate a little. Be guys with superpowers. It's not all bad. It's not all good. We'll talk about characters and get them worked out before the game starts.
Okay, great. I know what I want to do already.
Yeah, all right. Sounds good. Let's get excited. So that was Dungeon Men, and it's the longest arc that we've done so far, so I hope that everybody enjoyed it. If you did, I really appreciate support on Patreon. You can find me under Don Somewhere. I also have a website, donsomewhere.com, where you can find a list of like old things that I did. I've revamped the site recently, so now it's got a bunch of listings that are easier to sort through. It's much easier to find stuff. You can also find the link to support me on Patreon there. So again, that's Don Somewhere and donsomewhere.com. This arc was kind of interesting because the game that it was based on, I kind of gave everybody like a custom class, and then based on the things that they did during the game, I would give them abilities or make certain abilities stronger. And the reason Lowry winds up so powerful in the end was because I always like to design my NPCs before the game begins. And at one point I just gave Lowry an ability that no one had a defense against. And it was funny, and he kept using it, so it kept getting stronger. And eventually he was just a terrifying person. So yeah, someone asked me, they said, are these guys like high level now? And it's kind of a complicated question. The system is very open. I use the hero system. It's very narrative based. It's a universal system. It's kind of like GURPS, if you're familiar with GURPS, but more fantastical in a lot of ways. Like suppose you want the Hulk and Hawkeye on the same team. You've got to make ends meet somehow. So hero kind of does that really well. Some people do find it kind of a daunting system. There's a lot of rules that you could look at, but anyway. Next up is Unstoppable Momentum, a story of superheroes trying their best to live up to ideals.